All right, so we're going to begin by reviewing. Thank you, Alyssa, for that amazing talk. Just that this reminder that just as every song has a unique melody, so too every book of the Bible has a unique message. And when we grasp the melodic line, we talked about this, it kind of gives us this unifying foundation for each part of the book. It's huge. So melodic line was our first principle. All right, the next principle we're going to talk about is structure. Now, I will just say up front, those of you who were here last year know that this is not art is not my forte. So when you know what I'm drawing, please feel free to go ahead and put us all out of our misery, and that will be 100% fine, okay? So, thank you, who said it, thank you. Okay, guys, I never would have guessed, I would not have known this, so thank you. I don't know who did it, but thank you. Back in the 1950s, there were two men, James Watson and Francis Crick, and they made what is considered one of the greatest discoveries of the 20th century, and that's this DNA double helix. Now, some people, it's a misconception that they actually discovered DNA. DNA had actually was known about, the scientists had known about it for a long time. But around the time of World War II, they learned that DNA somehow contains a message. And so after that, the race was on to figure out the code, to break the code of the DNA. And so Watson and Crick, somehow by using cardboard models, eventually uncovered the structure of a double helix. And this was this structure that doesn't, well, you can imagine what it looks like. You've seen it, I hope. Not like this exactly, but anyway. This structure is what enabled them to figure out what the message is inside our chromosomes, inside our DNA. Because hidden inside of our chromosomes is this structure that determines everything about us. It's the color of our hair, our eyesight, our height, how long our fingers are. Everything about us is already is in this DNA, this message. And the better we understand our DNA, the better we understand who we are. So there's some, in some way, well, yes, so the better we understand the DNA, the better we understand we are. And so this message of the DNA kind of is the foundation for everything. And in the same way, when we come to a text, the structure in the text is what is that underlying code that determines everything else. It's what everything else in the text is resting on. When we come to a piece of literature, think about the structure of something like different literatures. Like say, a recipe. Okay, a recipe. What's the structure? Think about a recipe card. What when you see that? See at the beginning. What's first in a recipe?
The title.
What is it? The name of the food. Awesome. Exactly. What exactly is this about? Yeah. What am I doing here? What comes next?
Ingredients.
What is that?
Ingredients.
Exactly. Here are the ingredients you need to gather that we're going to have to put together. What's next?
Cooking
instructions. Well, how are you going to put the ingredients together? And then finally, yeah. How long do you cook it? What temperature? If a recipe isn't like that, it's kind of irritating, isn't it? If they're missing an ingredient or something, it's like, wait a second. Every recipe has a given structure. And think about a novel. You've got a plot arc, right? You've got this setting and the rising action and then the climax. And then there's this falling action and then there's the new setting. All right? Blogs, everything that has been ever been written has a structure. And so as Bible teachers, when we come to a text, we are faced with the task of decoding the DNA, in a sense, to find the heart of our text. So here is our principle. I've got to find it. Here we go. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. Now, those of you who have attended a workshop before might be thinking, excuse me, time out. That's different. And you're right. At Simeon Trust, we are always trying to make progress on our work, and over the past year, we've tweaked the wording on some of our principles. And I do want to say that does not mean the principles themselves have changed. It's just the word we're trying to make sure that we have consistent wording and continuity throughout. So here it is. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. When we find the structure that undergirds the text, that structure is going to help us understand what it was that the author was emphasizing. What was he trying to communicate to his original audience? So open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Go back to the very beginning. We were there earlier with Alyssa. All right. Just take a minute and let your eyes kind of scan over first chapter 1. And I want to see, see if you notice any pattern. One of the strategies we use is repetition to help find structure. So you see a pattern anywhere in Genesis chapter 1. And God said, yes, where do we see it? We see it in verse 3. Verse 6, where's the next time? 9, 11, 14. Okay, you can see all the way. It goes and goes. And then keep going. 20, 24. 26. Wait, okay, 26. Let's stop for a second. Is there anything different in 26? Then. Ooh, that's interesting. That's a little different. Okay, anything else? Any other repetition in this chapter? Let there be. Let there be. All right, where do we see let there be? 3, 6, 9, 11, 14, 20, okay, and then when we come to 26, what does he say? Let us make. Ooh, that's different too. Okay, what else? What other repetition do you see here? And it was so. It was so, yes. Okay, it was so. That's clear. And what's another one? God saw that it was good. Let's look at those. Where do we see God saw that it was good? Verse 4. Where else? Ten. 12. Okay. 21. 24. Then let's go out to When does the next time that we have a rep in day six? What does God say there? Look at verse 31. It was very good. Okay, we could spend a lot of time looking through all of these, and because there is so much repetition, but can you see how this repetition is pointing out, okay, we've got this structure. Day one, it was morning and evening the first day. Day two, day three, day four, day five. And then all of God's creation is good, but there's something different about mankind. Now, we're not going to dive into that, but can you see how this structure would help us when we're trying to come up with what was the author talking about? Are you tracking with me? Okay. All right. So, let's keep going. Now, thinking about the role in structure, stay open to Genesis 1 here. Imagine that a Bible teacher were to open to Genesis 1 and ignore the structure. Forget it. Not interested. What are some of the dangers of that? Yeah. So quickly. Exactly. We can go off on so many tangents. Yeah, exactly. We've kind of lost our anchor, right? Yeah, absolutely. Good. What else? so easily, exactly. We can like emphasize kind of whatever we feel like, right? Yeah, it's like, oh, kind of. And it causes, it's kind of us to lose focus, right? It's like, okay, it's almost disorienting, isn't it, when you hear a teacher who is like not anchored in the text? It's like, where are we? Because I need those anchors. What are some reasons that we, as Bible teachers, might be tempted to teach without looking at the structure? We have an agenda. Is that so true? Yes. I actually know what my women need to hear. You know, I really do know the Lord. Yeah. Really? That's scary. That's terrifying, actually. Yeah, we have an agenda. What else? It's easy. Exactly. It's like, just kind of read it. What does it mean to me? Like, that's scary. Super scary. Or, you know what? Yikes, I wasn't expecting to spend my day in the emergency room with my grandson. I actually didn't, but I'm saying, imagine. I wasn't expecting to spend the day in the emergency room with my grandson. I don't have time. Like, just reality, what am I going to do? I think I'm just going to pull out a couple quick ideas. Well, let me just say, as we're studying the scripture, besides, prayer is the most important part, so I don't want to say that. But it is well worth your time to dive in and study the structure of a text. You do not want your women to be lost. You don't want your women to be lost or stuck with your agenda instead of the Lord's agenda for them. You don't want them to, you don't want to go off on a tangent. It's worth the time, okay? It really is. Because finding the structure is how we understand what the author was communicating to their first audience. The pathway that Alyssa talked about, this is the first step, well, melodic line, but this is the first in our workshop, our worksheet, of getting up to what was the writer saying to them then. All right. Good. So we're going to talk about some strategies for this, but first we're going to talk about basically the two questions that our principal gets at is, one, how has the author organized this text? And two, what does that organization tell us about the heart of his message, about his emphasis? And so we're going to talk about some strategies to help us find that hidden DNA in our text. Questions? Yep? Questions so far? Are you all convinced? Like, this is so important. Yay. Okay. Awesome. We're going to keep going. All right. Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry. There we go. All right. Now, you got it? All right, the first strategy we're going to employ is actually super straightforward. We need to know what kind of a text it is that we're looking at. So in the Bible, there are three primary kinds of texts, and different strategies work better with different types of texts. So open your Bibles to Deuteronomy 30. Let's just look at 11 to 14. Just look at what. How would you describe this text? When you're looking at this, how would you describe it? What's happening here? He's speaking. Yeah, exactly. It is one-way communication, right? This is Moses' sermon. This kind of text is called discourse. All right? Discourse is when someone just writes or talks about a subject, and it's often communicated in a logical way. Most of Deuteronomy is discourse, it's Moses' sermons. The epistles are discourse. Questions about discourse? All right, the next kind, we talked about this. In melodic line, Alyssa had us look at 1 Samuel 2. What were we looking at there? Poetry. Yes. How can you tell if your text is poetry? Yeah, Isn't it? Yeah, exactly. The editors have arranged it differently on the page, right? It's kind of centered, and it's like you can see that it just looks different. Yeah. So that's poetry. There's poetry like Alyssa talks about in the beginning and end of 1 Samuel. There are a couple little smaller ones in the middle there. Beginning of 1 Samuel, end of 2 Samuel. All right. Most of 1 Samuel is narrative. All right, these are the three primary kinds of texts in the Bible. Any questions about how to identify these? Okay, now we need to know what kind of text we're looking at because we need different tools to uncover the structure of the text depending on the kind of text we're looking at. Just like we don't read a recipe the same way we read a novel, our strategies will be different with narrative than they are with poetry. So, tonight we're going to focus on strategies to help us find structure in narrative, since that's primarily what we find in 1 Samuel. So let's talk about some strategies that are going to help us dig through all of the extra details to uncover the structure in our text. So what are some ways that we might uncover the structure in a text? Just general ones. Big picture. Some strategies work for all kinds of texts. Reading it, exactly. Read it. And Alyssa talked about listening. Listening can be helpful too. I will say reading, read in different translations. You know, that's really helpful. I'm a huge ESV fan, but there are times when the NLT, I find it super, super helpful. So don't be afraid. What did we do? What strategy did we use in Genesis 1? Repetition. Yes. Repetition. All right. These two strategies are helpful in any text, any kind of text. Let's talk about specifically narrative now. We'll do it just a little break here. Narrative text. I'm going to put up the strategy of characters. How might looking at characters help us uncover a structure in a text? Yeah, tracking their trajectory. And maybe even comparing trajectories. That's great, Mary Lynn. All right. Comparing and contrasting their character. I love that you said that. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 2, just super quickly. We're just going to look at this. Which is exactly what you said. Compare and contrast. Okay, look in verse. I'm just going to just walk us through chapter or verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were worthless men; they did not know the Lord. Verse 17. Thus the sin of the young men was very great in the sight of the Lord. Verse 18. Samuel was ministering before the Lord. Verse 21. At the end, the boy Samuel grew in the presence of the Lord. Verse 22, Eli was very old. He kept hearing all that his sons were doing in Israel. He speaks to them. Verse 25, if someone sins against a man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? But they would not listen to the voice of their father. Verse 26, now the boy Samuel continued to grow both in stature and in favor with the Lord and also with man. How does that help us?
You see Samuel's trajectory and Eli's trajectory.
Yes, Samuel is growing in his understanding of the Lord, and Eli's sons are just tanking. All right? So that tells us something about what the author is emphasizing in this passage. He's comparing these two characters. All right. Contrast. So we've got similarities. Compare, contrast. All right. Other strategies that might be helpful. Anybody have one you want to suggest, or I'll just keep going? What is it? Scenes. Scenes. Yes. Oh, this is, guys. All right. Scenes. All right. How might scenes help us? Yes. Scenes, that kind of goes along with geographical changes too, right? So we've got, which is kind of put all of these maybe under literary features. Right, we have scenes. Geography is kind of interesting in 1 Samuel, isn't it? Let's look at 1 Samuel. Turn just over a couple pages, 1 Samuel 5. This is the Philistines captured the ark. Where do they take it in 5:1? Ashdod. Then where do they take it in verse 8? Is it 8? Yes, 8. Gath. All right. And verse 10, Ekron. Okay, that tells us something. Okay, people are like freaking out. Get it out of here. It's going to the next place. It's going to the next place. It's going to the next place. All of the Philistine world is reacting and freaking out, like, get this away from us, all right? So that tells us something about what the author is highlighting, is emphasizing. The Philistines are freaking out because God is judging them. All right, another literary feature is surprises. This is one of my favorite. Geography, oops, whoa. Not sure how I did that, which is troubling. And then surprises. I love this one. I love this strategy because it forces us, sometimes those of us who have studied God's word, we're just not really surprised. You know? Yeah, that happened. Yeah. There in this account, like take this, you know, yeah, those calves just happened, or that those mother cows just happened to walk all the way right down into Israel. Just amazing. Like, yeah, no. Is that really a big deal? No, it's a huge deal, okay? It's a big deal. So look for surprises. They're big, and they're exciting, and they're fun when you see them. All right, somebody have a question? Okay, what other strategy with narratives? Transition words. Yes, there are some transition words. That is especially helpful in discourse, transition words. And sometimes they'll be in narratives, but really super, super helpful in discourse. One that we haven't mentioned yet is plot arc. So a plot arc, I'm just going to kind of draw it over here, starts with a setting. This is just describing where does the text start? What's happening at the very beginning of your text? And then we have rising action, okay? This is where there's a problem or some tension is introduced in the account. And it grows until it hits a climax, a climactic point. The climax is the turning point in the account. This is the moment the account changes and there's no turning back. Then we have falling action. It's kind of the result of the change that has taken place as a result of the climax, outworking of the climax. And then there's a new setting. Now, this is super helpful for a lot of reasons. One is usually the emphasis won't necessarily be the climax, but it'll be somewhere around the climax because that's kind of like the big event in the text. So it's usually is somewhere around there. The other thing that is really helpful with plot arcs is it helps us compare where did we start, what was the setting here, and what's the setting here? What has changed throughout the account? Does that make sense? Questions? Okay. we get to do this. We're going to put some of these strategies to work. Okay, so turn in your Bible to 1 Samuel 17. So we're going to just over just a few pages. And we are going to employ first, these strategies, it's really helpful to layer them. It's not like, sometimes it's just like one strategy is super helpful and you just, but normally I find I need to use more than one. So we're going to do that with 1 Samuel 17. This is a familiar story. We're going to start with employing two strategies. First, I want you to employ the strategy of surprises. What is surprising in this account? And then two, this is contrast. So this is kind of the literary features, just the contrast of character. Actually, I guess characters. Falls under characters probably, more than literary features. Contrast between people in the account. So I want you to get with a partner, read the text, and then what is the surprise? Are there more than one? And then what are the contrasts that will help us understand what the author was emphasizing? Okay, questions? All right, go. Okay, you got one more minute. Okay, that was a short minute, but I think we can go. All right. What are the surprise? What surprises you?
He nailed him in one shot.
Thank you. He nailed him in one shot. Exactly, Rachel. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Don't miss the surprise, even when you know it. I mean, I put it in here because it's like so easy to be like, oh, it can't. That's too obvious. It's not too obvious. Don't miss the surprise. Okay. What about the contrast? Oh, yes. Oh, good, good. I love it.
So there was a contrast between the might of God, Goliath.
Okay, you know what? I need to write these down. I'm so sorry. I was trying to navigate like this, the iPad at the same time. Okay, it was their armor.
Right.
Okay.
Weapons.
David came alone. Alone or shield bearer. Okay. Oh, ooh, that's awesome. Might of God versus his might. Okay, what else? That is awesome. Thank you so much. You got to start really well. Other contrasts. What else did you notice?
I don't have a contrast, but I have another surprise.
Good. Right? So they were surprised too. Yeah, that's actually a great observation that they were so confident. Like, yeah, they were not, there was no room in their thinking for loss in this category. Yeah, that's great, Marilyn. Yeah, what else? Yeah.
Goliath says, I will give your flesh, David's flesh, to the birds. And David says, I will give the flesh of all the host of all of the Philistines.
Ooh, okay, that's a great contrast. The flesh. I'm just going to put flesh down there. All right, that's a great one. Anybody have more? Anything else to add to this list? Yes, their ultimate goal. No, there is a God in Israel. What was the Philistines' goal? Yeah, to dominate, destroy. All those words, all those ugly words, enslave, yeah, all of those, yes. Okay, so we've used two strategies so far. Now we're going to add one more on. We're going to use the strategy of plot arc. So these, all of these are going to play into, this is helping us figure out what is the author emphasizing, okay? We've got this surprise, a couple surprises. We've got all of these contrasts between these two sides of this battle. And now let's look at a plot arc. So work together with your partner And remember, we've got a setting, rising action, climax, falling action, and new setting. I'll write those down in a minute, but go ahead and get started. Okay, let's bring it back together. I want to hear from a few of you. Tell me about describe your plot arc for us.
Saul's tent.
Saul's tent. Okay. 38, starting in 38. We've got Saul's tent. Okay. No. What's happening? Yes. Like what are the circumstances in the beginning of the account? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that, Coco. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's a great question. You know what? I know this is a tricky one because I was trying to keep the text as like manageable for us. But so for this, we're going to start in 38. But I know we all know, like we all have that in our background, in our minds, and so it's there, and it's there in the text too. But for now, let's stick with these verses. Just I was trying to keep it manageable. Yeah. Yeah, Lisa. David, okay, preparing for battle. All right, yes, that's a great setting. Okay, what verses do you have for that? 38 to 40. Anybody have anything different for the setting?
Israel's under threat.
Israel's under threat. Yes, I love the way. Yes, you're right, because it's like the whole nation. It's not just David. It's the whole nation's under threat. Yes, good. That's, well, is that coming late in the, are you talking about the rising action?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's good though. Yes, it's coming. We're almost there. Yes, so the set, anybody have anything different for the setting? Verses 38 to 40, we've got Israel under attack, David's preparing for battle.
I have something to add. Yes. Talking about the city of it. I know it's prior to 38, but it's interesting that this was like, hey, correct. It's like, who can stand against me? This is David arising to that challenge, right? Like, others wouldn't.
Yes.
So that's interesting as well. I think it's preparing for battle, but it's also like significant that it's David that's arising.
It is. It is, yeah, and that's all context, and we're going to talk about that more tomorrow. It'd be super helpful. We don't want to miss that either. Yeah, go ahead. Thank you. They're all like terrified. Like, okay, what are we going to do? We're cowering. Yes, we got Israel. Yeah, and I don't know if that. Okay, yes, we know that that's happening. Okay, we know that's happening. All right. So the rising action. What's going? So what? Tell us the verses for the rising action in our text, and describe it. What's happening in the rising action? Verses, what to what? 41 to 50. All right. Tell us about what's happening in 41 to 50. I can actually really relate to that. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Tell us what's happening in 41 to 50. Yes, and we saw this, we brought this out in the contrast, didn't we? The rising action, and seeing that in the contrast is going to help us see it in this rising action. Like, we've got David with nothing and Goliath with everything. Yeah, I love that. Good. What else did you notice with the rising action? Oh, I'm sorry to hear this. Okay, so let's go back. So where, what verse, Coco, where was your verse?
I put it at 47.
47, okay.
So, speaking obedience.
Okay. He actually kills him. It's, yep, yep. Yes.
We can both be pretty.
You can both be beautiful. Absolutely, you can. Yes. Okay. I'm so glad you brought this up. This is super important because there actually, if you were to go online and look up plot arc for climax in the story of Cinderella, there is a very heated academic debate about where the climax is in the story of Cinderella. Is it when the clock strikes 12? Is it when she leaves her shoe? Or is it when the prince places it on her foot? And people will make arguments for all three of those. And here's the deal. It is the point of no return, but this plot arc is a tool to help us find the emphasis. And I would argue that you will come up with a very similar emphasis with both of those plot arcs. And so from that standpoint, you want to get it right. You can't say verse 44 is the emphasis, is the climax. You can't just not, it does matter. You have to be able to make a case for it. But if you can make a case, I would argue you will still have the same emphasis, which is really what we're going for. Does that make sense? Okay. So we have for climax, we have verse, what did you say again? What were the two choices? Okay. You can make it. I'm making an argument for verse 45. Okay. All right. Three optional climaxes. Falling setting. We're just going to fly through this now. Israel, we all agree by the time Goliath is dead, we have reached the end of the climax. Falling action. We've got Israel pursuing, defeating the Philistines. And what's the new setting at the end? Yeah, and Goliath's head is in Jerusalem, all right, as a trophy, okay? Israel's God has defeated their enemy. Okay, now, we've got just a couple minutes. I want you to take just 2 minutes, put all of this together. What is the author emphasizing? What message does he want his readers to take away? One statement. No ands, no commas. Okay? No ands, no commas. All right? You've got 2 minutes. Actually, you've got 1 minute. Sorry. Okay, so I've asked you to do in a minute what you probably would spend an hour and a half doing in your study. So I apologize for that. But you do have two or three brains working on it. So, okay. Let's hear for a couple of a couple of you share your emphasis. What is the writer of 1 Samuel want us to take away from this? You've looked at the surprise, you've looked at the contrast, and now you've looked at the plot arc.
The battle belongs to the Lord.
The battle belongs to the Lord. Okay, good. The Lord of hosts delivers his people from their enemies. That brings in a lot of pieces in there. Awesome. Good. What else? I love that.
God used a lowly shepherd to strike down an evil one who cursed
his people. Ooh, yeah. You got the lowly shepherd, which is bringing the melodic line that we talked about. I love it. Good job, Mary Lynn. All right. Lowly shepherd defeating, how did you describe Goliath?
An evil one.
Awesome. Good. All right. Can you see how all of these strategies, in all of our emphasis, we've got the battle. God's king is defeating the enemies of God's people. And it's a shock. This is the contrast. We've got David, and who's like nobody, defeating this powerful national champion of the Philistines with no sword. The battle is the Lord's. So all of these things, you've got David freeing God's fearful people. He's defeating their enemies. Which I think came out in all of our statements just a little differently. Questions about how we just did that? Well, I think when we talk about David freeing God's people by defeating their enemy, that's pretty, if you use some adjectives, this powerful enemy, that's going to make me think about David and Goliath.
No.
Yeah, that's... Yes, you do want it to be about this text. So that is this text. That's good. That's a good clarification. Thank you. You want it to, the melodic line is the whole book, and we want this to be with underneath that melodic line, but specific. Okay? That's a good question. Okay. Well, we are out of time, so we are going to skip over our next, but just a reminder, here we go. Every text has a structure. Oh, this is the old one. It is the old one. You're right. Ay, ay, ay. Okay, we're going to go back to the first one. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. There we go. All right. All right. Great job, guys. Thank you. Thank you for sticking with us. It is late, and I'm a minute over, but it's just been a joy to work together. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. All right.